from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Are we too wrapped up in food? Too wrapped up for our available time, for our waistlines, our pocketbooks, for the environment? My guest today has made a splash with his alternative, not nuts and berries and beans, but a mix and drink nutrient called Soylent. The headlines say the end of food. This hour On Point, the foodie's nightmare, but holy grail for others, nutrition in a pouch. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Have you tried living on Soylent or some other unfood food? Is it time we made food more efficient? Can man, woman, live on liquid nutrients alone? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later in this hour, we will look into the explosion on Tuesday of the Antares rocket shortly after liftoff. But first, to what do we call it? Alternatives to food? Here's a little bit. We're going to hear in just a moment from the CEO of Soylent. Here's a little bit from one of the company's promotional videos.
Whether you have a busy schedule or are looking for a low-cost way to be healthy, you can now guarantee your body gets the nutrition it needs. Soylent can give you the freedom to live life the way you want to live.
Soylent, it's freedom. What does it taste like? Well, here the New York Times asked a gastroenterologist, a sommelier, a personal trainer, and a Times dining reporter to test Soylent. Here are their responses.
Tastes like grit.
I wouldn't necessarily say it's delicious. It tastes very healthy.
Reminds me of like a protein shake with less taste.
A little gritty. You can feel it. This is sort of what I always imagined Ensure would taste like.
A lot of people signing up for it. One who may not, Stephen Colbert, our my guest today, Soylent CEO Rob Reinhart, was on the Colbert Report back in June, talked about his Soylent. Colbert, skeptical.
What was the inspiration for this? Did you see someone in a coma with a feeding tube, and you thought, I'll have what he's having.
But a lot of people are putting their hand up for Soylent. Joining me right now from Los Angeles is Rob Reinhart, CEO and founder of Soylent. Founded in 2013, Soylent ships packets with, they say, all the nutrients you need, meant for drinking, in a kind of shake. No muss, no fuss, no actual food, at least not as we've traditionally understood it. It's been a hit in tech country and well beyond. Rob Reinhart, welcome to On Point. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
What's the point of this, Soylent?
The point is, as you mentioned before, a little more efficiency, a little more utility in our food. And it's not really a new idea. Humans have always tried to engineer their food and their production systems to be a little more efficient, have more energy output for less energy input. So it's not really a new idea. It's just a little more refined. It's using our present-day understanding of nutritional biochemistry, industry, distribution networks in order to have a more efficient foodstuff for the common man. We see this as an engineered staple in that it's not something that's naturally occurring, but it's something that we have designed sort of in our own image, something that is optimized to give you all the nutrition you need and save you time, save you money, and allow you to be healthy.
What are you finding? Who wants this and who doesn't want it, Rob?
We're finding that this is something that can be incorporated into a number of different lifestyles for in different manners. So we're seeing all across the board. We're seeing a lot of students trying to save money and time. We see busy professionals. We see travelers. We see people who are trying to be healthier, truck drivers, medical workers, construction workers, researchers, all sorts of people. I mean, this is food. Everybody needs to eat. Everybody has their staple. And I think that most people could stand to eat better. We're seeing interest from everywhere.
What are you proposing here? Are you proposing this as a full-time food? Like, this is, hi, I'm Tom, and I eat Soylent three meals a day and every day, and I'm good?
We do have some customers like that who are quite happy, but I don't think that's going to be the norm. What I'm advocating for is a little bit of moderation, and it's not too big of a stretch. If you look at our eating behavior already, the majority of our meals are repeated staples that are simple, nutritious, and affordable. This is just something that's deliberately designed to be as nutritious as possible, as affordable as possible, and as convenient as possible. So we find that our market typically use it between 60 and 80% of their meals. Some people less, some people more. Personally, I'm around 80%. We don't prescribe or advocate for any specific balance. It's a tool to be incorporated into your life however you see fit. So we're not trying to get people to stop eating. We just want people to use it however they see fit.
So if efficiency is important to me, this may be good. What about Beyond Meat? Is this any better than industrial food and or organic food or any other kind for the environment, for the planet?
Oh, absolutely. By every measure you could imagine.
Why?
Virtual water footprint, carbon footprint, getting away from, so it's is devoid of animal products, avoids the retail supply chain. We use all plant proteins. It's orders of magnitude more efficient to produce and consume than the standard American diet.
And what's in it?
Everything the body needs. There are about 35 different ingredients. Go down the body's nutrition requirements. And the amounts advocated for by the Institute of Medicine, the FDA, and the World Health Organization in the most bioavailable and affordable and soluble format, everything the body needs. Salts, minerals, electrolytes, calories, amino acids,
lipids. I'm looking here, oat powder, pea protein, grapeseed oil, salt, magnesium, gluconate, right on down. Is it any different from the old, instant breakfast mixes from Carnation or Ensure, all those I don't even know what you call them in the drugstore?
I'm not sure where you got that formula. That may be someone's DIY blend or early prototype version.
Okay.
But we do use oat flour. Protein comes from rice. Lipids come from canola oil. Salts and vitamins are synthesized or mined, some of them avoiding agriculture entirely, which is an idea that I'm very bullish about. There have been, a lot of formulations in the past. A lot of people have tried to engineer food. But only for the purpose of, say, weight loss or supplementation. No one has really gone all the way and tried to increase the design constraints, go a little farther and try to make a complete staple foodstuff that is affordable and convenient and something that could really sustain you.
How could a food company avoid agriculture entirely? That's a catchy phrase, but I mean, agriculture produces food.
Organisms produce food. And organisms have been changing, and they will continue to change. And agriculture is just impossibly inefficient and unsustainable.
So what have you got, pits of algae or something? Or where else would you turn?
Yes, actually, omega-3 acids, fatty acids, come from algae. And in time, I believe that the entirety will be synthesized by algae or yeast. We've been using yeast for thousands of years to synthesize ethanol. So, they're tiny machines. They can synthesize the ingredients of life the same way that plants or animals do, just much, much more efficiently. So the first step was to get away from animal products. We use mostly a lot of plant products. And then in the future, we will harvest the ingredients from algae, avoiding agriculture entirely.
Is this a first world product, or could you feed the world somehow affordably on Soylent?
This is for everyone. It's balance. The first world gets their time savings and their nutrition from the unbalanced diets that we're living on currently. And as we get the cost down and the distribution wider, the third world has an affordable staple meal.
Rob Reinhardt is CEO and founder of Soylent. They're shipping all over the place. I'm reading here sometimes it can take a long time to get it these days as people wait for their batch. Rob, stand by in Los Angeles. Lee Hutchinson is with us from Houston, Texas, senior reviews editor at the tech news website Ars Technica. Lee, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Tom. Good to be here.
You've written a lot on this and very interestingly about it. And I guess my first question is, Lee, why have you and others even paid much attention to this? There's lots of stuff, you can eat out there. There are other supplements. What grabbed your attention about this, Lee?
Honestly, the thing that jumps out immediately when you hear about a product named Soylent is that there is a product named Soylent.
Right. We remember the old movie with Charlton Heston, Soylent Green. It's made out of people. It was sort of a horror flick from the late 70s, somewhere back then.
Yeah, based on the I think it was a Harry Harrison novel, Make Room, Make Room, I think is what it was called.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Still, that's cool, but that wouldn't make me write a series of articles about it. And you've written a lot. You lived on it for the better part of a week, Lee.
I did. Yes, I reached out to Rob last summer, and he was kind enough to provide to Ars Technica a 5-day supply of the the formula as it was in work at the time. Interestingly, Rob numbers this stuff like software. So I had the beta 0.08 version, okay. Or 0.8 version of software.
How appetizing.
Yeah. Yeah, I lived on it for a week. It was interesting. It was an interesting experience. I forsook all food and went with Soylent for 5 full days. And had a variety of fascinating experiences on it. It was neat. I mean, it certainly didn't make me die. Felt fine. 5 days, of course, isn't long enough to do any kind of truly significant qualitative analysis of something like this, but I know Rob has spent, I'm sure he can speak to it, much more time than that delving into the analysis of the effect that this stuff has on the human
body. Did you go crazy with boredom? I've got a little bit right here. One of my producers is into this, and it's kind of a beige milk, like a half-melted milkshakey looking thing. Smells a little bit like a McDonald's shake at the first.
It does. So
tastes a little bit like oatmeal.
He's changed the formulation a little bit since the initial shipping version, but the one that I had, it tastes sort of vaguely sweet. Mm-hmm. There's sucralose in it, so it tastes a teeny bit artificial and a little gritty. But did I go crazy? No, not really. I mean, I work from home and I work a lot. I'm typically on the clock for 12-ish hours, yeah, writing stuff.
Yeah.
And it was really handy just to have a pitcher in the fridge that I could just grab and slam. It worked for me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about what you might call the anti-food movement, the people who are tired of all the shopping and cooking and ooing and aahing and maybe eating the wrong stuff. They just want the nutrition. A cup of, maybe a milkshake or goop is fine, and it's out there. Rob Reinhart is with us. He's CEO and founder of Soylent. If the name is resonant, well, maybe it goes back to 1973 sci-fi film Soylent Green. In the film, much of the world's population survives on rations produced by the Soylent Corporation. Here, the injured police detective Frank Thorne, played by Charlton Heston, no less, tries to let others know what Soylent Green is made of.
You gotta tell him. You gotta tell him.
Promise, Tiger. I promise. I'll tell the exchange.
You tell everybody. Listen to me, Hatcher. You gotta tell him. Soylent Green is people! We've got to stop them somehow!
It's people, people, you're eating people. Not this time out. It's grape seed, it's got oats, it's got, Rob Reinhart will take us on down that list. We'll go to a professor of nutritional sciences in a moment. Lee Hutchinson is with us as well from Houston, Texas, senior reviews editor at the tech web news website Ars Technica. He spent 5 days on Soylent. We'll hear more about that as well. Lots of callers on this for you, Rob. Barry is calling from Bowling Green, Kentucky. Barry, you're on the air.
Yes, Tom. Hi, how are you?
Very well. How about you, Barry? What do you think?
I'm very interested. I mean, I drive a truck. And I'm home on the weekends, and yep, just the food cost itself out here on the road can be very expensive for a driver.
Mm-hmm.
But I also watch what I eat during the week. I usually eat chicken, fish, crackers. My diet is very, very limited on the road because I watch my weight and
sure,
watch my intake. I
sure
eat fruit and drink water and tea and coffee, and that's what my diet consists of all week.
So a truck driver, and you face those limited food options at many places you might pull off to eat, I guess, Barry. If you could have a few pouches of this ready to go, it looks interesting to you.
Oh, yes, very interesting. I mean, as long as it's got the nutrients that the body needs, I'm ecstatic about the product. Very interested. Very excited to hear about it.
Let's look at what you might want to know about it. Rob Reinhart, here's Barry, truck driver. It sounds interesting to him. Is that the right profile, somebody this might be good for or not?
That makes a lot of sense, actually. We've heard from quite a number of truck drivers. What Barry says is true. When you're out on the road, and you, what options do you really have? There's fast food. There's restaurants can be expensive. They close early. You're driving late at night. What are the options for food that are affordable and convenient and healthy, especially out on the road? There aren't really any. And so having something that you can just take along with you, it's very shelf stable. It'll sit in your truck for years and not spoil. You can mix it up whenever you want. Just add water, down it and go. You won't feel tired, which can be a safety hazard when you're on the road late at night. Everyone knows eating a big heavy meal meal is going to weigh you down. It's going to make you feel sleepy. Not the case with Soylent. It takes very little energy for your body to absorb the nutrients in Soylent. So you're not going to feel down. The glycemic index is low. It's not going to spike your blood sugar and give you a crash. It takes care of all of the essentials, all the necessary electrolytes and nutrients, and gives you all the calories you need. And so it's something, you know, you won't have to worry about when you're on the road, and you can really focus on the task at hand. So this is, yeah, that story really resonates with me. I think that we've heard from quite a few specifically truck drivers, and I think this use case makes a lot of sense.
Eileen in Southbury, Connecticut. Very good luck with that. Eileen, you're on the air.
Hi,
what do you think?
I can stand with the Soylent. Is it's funny for, coming from me, because I always wish for to just zip open my stomach, dump something in it, and be on the go. It sounds like it's a great supplement, but I have concerns with it, and that is, first, we don't need anything further taking away from our social net society, in that our fibers are really very loose, and that we sit down and eat a meal together. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Just on the social front, you're worried about it. What about as a food itself, Eileen? We'll look at social. What about the food?
Well, okay. I think oral hygiene. Your teeth, we have a set of teeth, and they need to be exercised. We have to be chewing food. For healthy gums, apples, celery, yeah, carrots, yeah, healthy gums and teeth. Another thing about it is I think that we should, it would take us a step further from supporting our local farmers. And, this is another thing that could be, produced in God knows where. And eventually, just anything coming in a package, you're not really, really sure of its contents. We already have plenty of issues with ingredients and food. And everything that's inside our food really isn't really always labeled.
Eileen, that's a big list. Social, what's in it, exercising your jaw, keeping your teeth in good shape. We'll run through that list, and Rob, I'll bring some of that to you. But if I may, I want to bring Martha Stepanek in first. She's a professor of molecular nutrition at Cornell University's Department of Nutritional Sciences. Martha, thank you very much for joining us.
Hello.
You pay a lot of attention to nutrition. Rob Reinhart has made a splash with nutrition in a bag. I don't know if this is like Dean Kamen's, segue from a few years ago. A lot of hubba-hubba, and then everybody kind of forgets about it. Or maybe this is the future of food, Martha. Maybe engineered food that's not as often damaging as a lot of the stuff we eat is. Maybe this is a good way to go. How do you look at this?
Well, when I first read about Soylent, the description of it as a beige powder that tastes and looks a lot like pancake batter when it's mixed with water, it really made me think of the powdered non-purified diets that nutrition scientists have been feeding to experimental animals for decades.
Yummy.
I've made a lot of those, and they never look too yummy to me. Although, of course, when I look at the component list, for his formula, it's very similar to how we make semi-purified diets for experimental animals in nutrition studies. And, of course, animals today live on those diets for years. And so clearly they can sustain life and health. I think we do need to note that over the decades in our studies, it's been a learning process about essential nutrients, and we often have fed diets that have ended up being deficient and not being healthy for animals because of our incomplete knowledge. So using them for experiments is one thing. Eating them every day is something else. Looking at the diet, as far as its nutrition content, I think it seems to meet, Ron mentioned, the IOM and WHO recommendations for nutrient intakes. I would say from the limited information I have about the product, which isn't complete, that I would estimate that the rice protein is limiting in lysine, so that the protein amount should be adequate for most people, but it could become borderline for some individuals or situations, and most likely that would be for people with the lowest total energy needs. And I also noted that the sodium level that they recommend or the sodium level that mm-hmm. is in Soylent is near the top of the recommended upper limit for sodium intake. So those were just my two concerns.
Martha, let me ask you that. I mean, when you say, well, it works for experimental animals, that hardly makes it sound appetizing. On the other hand, you're saying you've got a lot of nutrients in here. It may have a lot of salt, but then a lot of things have a lot of salt that Americans eat. And it makes me, in terms of health, I suppose we're not comparing this with perfection. Many American diets are pretty crummy, and we know that. Does it look like a path to health to you? We're not really asking, could an astronaut survive on it for 6 months, but rather, could people walking around right here, you know, on Earth, if they picked it up and integrated it into their diet, is that a good idea or not?
Okay. I think definitely if you're asking, is it better than having chips and a soda for lunch?
Mm.
Yes. Is drinking Soylent every meal, every day, better than having a donut and a cup of coffee for every meal, every day? Yes. Is it better than eating a variety of nutritious foods every meal, every day? I would say probably not. I think I say that largely because we have a lot of epidemiological studies that have over and over shown that populations consuming plant food-rich diets made up of whole foods, not semi-purified nutrients or components from those foods, have benefits for health. And a lot of times we don't know the explanations for that. And I think we've had these formula-type food products that have served as meal replacements around for a long time. Most manufacturers have been careful not to recommend them for long-term use or to claim that they're a complete diet or that one should eliminate food in the diet completely. I guess the thing we've used that's most like this would be feeding infant formulas to infants exclusively for the first 6 months of life. And, of course, we have done that, and most infants on those formulas do okay.
But do you see a need here? Rob suggests that this is better for the planet. You've got lower packaging costs, lower transportation costs. Agriculture, as we practice it, is very inefficient, might ultimately work for people in undernourished countries. Is there a need that we may want to engineer a lower impact, more efficient food for the future? To your eye, Martha.
Yes. Well, you're still going to have to produce the macronutrients in these products. So the protein and carbohydrate and fiber and fat isn't going to be produced without plants or without plant life, even if it's single organism or plant life like algae. It's going to have to be grown. We have to use the sun's energy to do that. So we're going to have plants. I think his biggest claim is probably not using animal products in the Soylent, and a lot of people are interested in going to more of a plant-based diet for sustainability reasons and for feeding the planet reasons.
So many callers lined up here. Let's go to Miami, Florida. Jason, you're on the air. Thanks for calling, Jason.
Hi, Tom. How's it going?
Well, what do you wonder?
I started my health kick, I want to say, about 12 years ago. I stopped eating fast food. I started looking into things like Moringa and mangosteen and just being generally more healthy. I looked into Soylent, and what grabbed me was just the convenience. And it obviously does have a rich, I guess, nutritional value.
Mm-hmm.
My concern is that it contains artificial sweeteners, and those have been linked, I mean, to so many health risks, health problems, what have you, not limited to, but beyond, I mean, like brain cancer, for example. So just the, I wanted to know his thoughts.
Sure.
On that.
I think anybody will understand that concern, but we should take that straight to Rob. Rob Reinhardt, what do you say there?
Sure. That's something we do hear from time to time. But if you really look into it, I would question that claim between artificial sweeteners and brain cancer. I mean, that's
it is a little
extreme.
Sweet. What sweeteners do you use, Rob?
So we use sucralose, and we did just in version 1.1 reduce the amount slightly in order to reduce the sweetness. So sucralose is a non-nutritive sweetener. artificial sweetener. what have you, it's actually one of the most extensively studied chemicals in the world. Literally hundreds of safety and health studies have been run and published on this chemical. It is completely safe within two orders of magnitude easily of the amounts that it is included in many, diet drinks like diet soda. And the amount that we use is even, substantially less than that. 30 milligrams in a day is a nearly negligible amount. So it's important to look into that as well. And some of these studies, in fact, I mean, not to get too conspiratorial, but I mean, if you look at the sugar lobby, is incredibly powerful and is feeling a lot of threat from these artificial sweeteners because, the health effects of sugar are well documented. Diabetes and prediabetes.
We get that. Crisis. Sugar's no wonderful thing. This isn't extremely sweet, as Lee Hutchinson says, but Martha, what about sucralose? Our caller in Miami asks, is it okay?
Well, I think we've certainly been using artificial sweeteners for a long time, and sucralose has been used a lot. I think we don't know. There's still research on these, and people are debating it. At this time, I don't think there are big concerns about it. I think use of sucralose is, some of these are products that escape absorption. Well, sucralose is a little bit different than some of the artificial sweeteners, but it escapes absorption through the GI tract as a modified form of sucrose. And so it could affect the intestinal microflora, and folks are interested today in how modifying the microflora might contribute to health. And so I think that is one issue that's being studied. But, I think at this point we don't know that it's not, we don't know of any reason that it's not safe.
Carla in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Carla, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Well, first of all, I want to know why the name Soylent. To me, that sounds like a chemical that I do not want to put into my body. And you also talk about affordability, and I'm just wondering what the price point per meal would be. And I'll hang up and take my answers off air. Thank you,
Carla. Rob, why that name? It was certainly in Soylent Green. It was not presented as a panacea, that's for sure. And then what about the cost?
So the movie changed a very important aspect of what really inspired me, which was the book by Harry Harrison, Make Room, Make Room. In the book, Soylent is just made of soya and lentil, which makes a complete protein and is this synthetic staple meal for the population to live on in the future where we have overburdened our planet with agriculture. Mm-hmm. And that made a lot of sense to me. Obviously, we're going to need this skilled manufacturing, nutritious staple that we automatically pump out and feed the world. And it was called Soylent in this book. In the movie, they changed an aspect and included human remains. It's still a fantastic movie, but there are no human remains in Soylent. But I do encourage you to read the book, Make Room, Make Room by Harry Harrison. It's fantastic.
And what's it cost per serving or day or however you dish it out?
So it's about $3 a meal. We encourage people to subscribe. And if you use it part of your routine, it's more convenient to just have it show up on your doorstep. And the larger your subscription, the greater the cost savings. But it averages out to be about $3 a meal.
Lee, how many meals a week do you imagine you might conceivably work this into your personal diet?
I did buy some of the production Soylent. So I have this stuff at my house, and I found that I end up using it generally about once or twice a week. It's definitely not an everyday thing. But for lunch while I'm working is generally the most common thing. If I haven't made anything that I can eat the night before that I can eat for lunch, I'll just grab the Soylent pitcher and pour out lunch. And that brings up something I did want to address mm-hmm. very, very briefly. Mm-hmm. And that's that I know Rob has reformulated to address this. But when I first tried Soylent, I have to say that I did experience a fair amount of gas, being polite about it. After you're on it for a little while, you adapt to it. But, using it occasionally, you do get a little bit of the toots every once in a while.
Okay, the toots are on the table and a lot more. Lee Hutchinson, please stand by. Martha Stepanek at Cornell University's Department of Nutritional Sciences. Thank you so much for joining us today, Martha.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about what? Engineered food, I guess. You might call it even the anti-food movement. When Soylent made a splash on the market earlier this year, the big headline that got people's attention, it was in the New Yorker, said the end of food. Lee Hutchinson also got people's attention, wrote about 5 days on Soylent for Ars Technica. tech community in particular has been very interested in this kind of, it's got all the nutrients you need, just mix up a pouch of powder and oils, off you go, no muss, no fuss, no shopping, no cooking, no chopping. It's efficient, says CEO Rob Reinhart. He's founder of Soylent. He's with us from Los Angeles. Maybe you need the efficiency. Maybe the planet does. Or maybe there's something else you need from food. We're going to turn to that exploding rocket in Virginia in a moment. And we've got issues Lee has put on the table. John Lanchester joins us in just a second here. Dory in Jamestown, Rhode Island. Dory, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
So we're reducing our food intake now to nutritious supplements. What's next? Is it sex? Do we stop having sex so we start procreating in petri dishes?
Yeah, sex is so inefficient, Dory. You could just do it in a petri dish. Who needs all that muss and fuzz?
Who needs the sensual or the emotional aspect of it? Why teach our kids, you know, about gardening and growing things? Why bother with that? Give them a pack. Send them off to school. You know, just let them eat out of a package. I mean, this is ridiculous. This is crazy. What does this say about our lazy to cook culture?
Yes. I hear it all, and we got a lot of people write on that note. Judy's writing to us, this is insane. Many of us like to enjoy food in our free time. Personally, life is not worth living if I can't enjoy a sliced tomato on sourdough bread. Amy in Springfield, Tennessee, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My comment is very similar. I'm curious as to why would we want to take that pleasure from our lives and just add more work? What's the point to that?
Well, what's the work? I mean, all you have to do is mix together two packets and glug, 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 you're done.
No, I mean being able to do more work
I see.
But not to enjoy anything.
Right, to swing a shovel or write some more code but not enjoy that. Rob Reinhart, there's a lot of response online and right here on air along these lines. What do you say?
I say more time for work. I see it as more time for leisure. Producing food, preparing food, shopping, cooking, cleaning, dishes is work. This is less work. This is more time for leisure. This is automating the essentials of life so that we can enjoy the pleasures more. If you save time and money in your day-to-day routine and you're healthier, then you have more resources to enjoy a nice meal out with your family more often. Practically speaking, most of our meals are forgotten. What we're targeting are the staple meals. We're not coming for your sliced tomato on sourdough, which is delicious. We're not asking anyone to give that up. We're taking a practical approach and saying that, I mean, really, do you really enjoy, you know, making the same sandwich for lunch every day? Do you really enjoy scrambling eggs every single morning? Do you really enjoy going to the grocery store and parking and burning fuel and waiting in line? A lot of people, I think, would stand to take a step back and look at and see that we're repeating the same work in parallel over and over, and it's wasteful. And it's not that we should become office drones jogging Soylent. I see this as reducing our overall the necessity of work overall, because a lot of work goes into this food preparation. And I think this could be free up a lot of time and labor. And if you'd like to spend that time enjoying your favorite meal, absolutely go for it. But, I mean, not all of our free time, I think, should be spent eating. I mean, there's a lot of pleasures in life other than food. And I think giving people more freedom with their time and their money and their health could only be good.
There's the argument, Amy, Dory, I don't know, maybe free up time for more sex, who knows. Rob Lee, stand by. John Lanchester joins us from London. He's a contributor to The New Yorker, where this Soylent got a lot of attention a few months ago. He's got an essay out that's headlined, Shut Up and Eat. It appears in this week's issue of The New Yorker, former restaurant critic for The London Observer and The Guardian, author of the new book, How to Speak Money. John Lanchester in London, thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm fine. Is this what you mean by your headline, which is sort of irritated and impatient with foodies who never stop talking about food? Is this what you're talking about? Just glug down some goop, John, and everything's good?
No, I think it's an overcorrection. I think the thing about food is there aren't many things in life that you have to do three times a day, whether you want to or not. You know, certainly sex doesn't fit in that category. Mm-hmm. And it's possible to think about food too little, since we have to do it, and it makes sense to derive pleasure from it and think about it and integrate it into our lives and think about its meaning and all that. So you can think about food too little, and you can think about food too much. And the essay I wrote was largely about some of the ways in which our culture has, you know, seems to have gone a little bit crazy in terms of its obsession with food and food being all across all media, everywhere, all the time. Mm-hmm. But I'd be lying if I said I thought the solution was drinking nutrient-oriented gloop.
What about three times a week? What about six times a week? Do you see a place in the modern diet or in the future for this very efficient, let's just fuel up and go?
Well, actually, you know, I do in a kind of purely utilitarian way. And the man who called earlier, who was talking about tracking and food, mm-hmm. you know, that definitely strikes a chord. It's very, very difficult to eat any kind of balanced diet if you're if you have a kind of demanding travel schedule, and you do end up repeatedly. I find myself making lousy nutritional choices when I'm on the road for whatever reason. But I do think that's a pretty small thing. I think that, you know, your callers who are talking about food as a source of pleasure are onto something very important.
Yes, amen.
I think, you know, Rob thinks of it in terms of work, and I've noticed with friends who's interested in cooking and who isn't, there's a quite simple test that if people think of it as a chore and as a source of work, mm-hmm. they really dislike and resent it. Whereas all the people I know who like cooking and shopping and thinking about food don't see it as a chore. They see it as an active pleasure. And I think the more pleasure you take in it, it becomes self-reinforcing. There's a kind of virtuous mm-hmm. cycle. And, you know, food structures our days. You get up in the morning, you think about breakfast. If you've got kids, you think about getting them to eat a healthy breakfast. You have to make a plan for lunch. You have to make a plan for dinner. The dinner reminds you of other dinners. In the New Yorker essay, I wrote about a spaghetti thing I cooked that, mm-hmm. you know, it was the first thing I ever learned to cook. My mother taught me to make. And every single time I cook that, I remember my mother. I remember her. You know,
yeah.
very vividly.
Heritage,
she's sort
yeah.
of, she's with me
yeah.
when I'm
yeah.
doing that. And I think a crucial part, you know, as important as the nutritional component of food is the component that's to do with memory and identity and pleasure. It's, you know, it's not only in terms of nutrition that food makes up who we are. All those other sides of its meaning are very, very important. And life is mainly about the meanings we make. You know, once we've taken care of our basic bodily needs, life is then about a search for meaning. And food is an incredibly important source of that. And I think that, you know, while there are boxes it ticks in terms of being useful on specific occasions, I think that there's some sense in which the Soylent Project, which is a very interesting one, but I think it does partly deny that sense of the meaning of food.
Hey, Rob Reinhart, CEO of Soylent, what about the gas factor Lee Hutchinson raises? Are you what's version 1.2 got on that front?
So that started from the nutrition, as with everything with a product. Experts recommend a high protein, high fiber diet. Mm-hmm. And Soylent has it in spades, over 100 grams of protein, 27 grams of fiber. That's a lot. As it turns out, though, your microflora, your gut bacteria, really like that too. And they become, in some people, depending on, you know, people's microflora are as unique as a fingerprint. And some people have had have very active gut bacteria, and that has led to some digestive issues. Mm-hmm. We have tried to correct that in subsequent versions by first adding an enzyme blend, which helps to break down some of those fibers that are known to cause some of the issues. And future versions, we've reformulated the carbohydrate and fiber blends to eliminate the issue entirely.
Lee, you didn't stick with it 5 meals a day, but you ended up sympathetic. For a lot of people, this may have some place in their lives, you write, Lee.
Yes, absolutely. There's a strong correlation between geekery and cookery, but not everyone can cook, especially some of the tech set. And there's a lot of people who are looking to a product like Soylent to save them from a destructive relationship with food. The official Soylent forum has a lot of posts on that thread.
Lee Hutchinson, you write wonderfully about it at Ars Technica. You can link to it, listeners, at our website, onpointradio.org. Lee, thank you for being with us today. Wonderful to have you.
Thank you, Tom. It was fun.
Rob Reinhart, CEO and founder of Soylent. I guess we wish you good luck. Some will like it, some won't, but it's going to be fascinating to see how it evolves. Rob, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me, Tom.
And John Lanchester, contributor to The New Yorker, author of How to Speak Money, What the Money People Say and What It Really Means, joining us from London. John, thanks so much for your thoughts today.
Thank you very much, Tom.
In a moment, the explosion of a private rocket carrying a payload for NASA. This is On Point.
And we have liftoff of Antares, the debris mission that brings Cygnus on its third CRS mission to the ISS.
Oh, my God!
Across the... Jeez!
Yeah,
On Tuesday, an Antares rocket lifted off from a NASA launch pad on Wallops Island, Virginia. The rocket was built by the private space firm Orbital Sciences Corporation and was carrying a payload for the International Space Station. But soon after ignition, the rocket exploded. The payload was destroyed. For more, we're joined by Tariq Malik in New York. He's managing editor of Space.com. Tariq, welcome back to On Point. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Glad to be here. Thank you.
Can you first explain just the relationships? As this rocket sat on the pad, who owned what? Who built what? Who was responsible for what? What was NASA and what was private, Malik?
Great. Well, basically, the rocket and the payload was built completely commercially by this company, Orbital Sciences. They're based in Virginia. It's why they chose this launch site, because it's pretty local for them. Yep. They launched from NASA's Wallops Flight Facility, so that's a NASA center on Wallops Island on Virginia's eastern shore. But the pad they were launching from is managed by the Mid-Atlantic Regional Spaceport, so that's a commercial enterprise for commercial flights out of this NASA center. So several agencies kind of at play, but when it really comes down to it, the $200 million rocket was owned by Orbital. Its spacecraft, the Cygnus spacecraft, also owned and built by Orbital. NASA was basically paying for the cargo services for this mission.
What were they taking up to the space station? Was this food? Was this essentials? Was this experiments waiting to be performed? What?
It's really a grab bag of almost everything. This is a large spacecraft. It's a kind of like a car-sized cylinder. And it was packed with about 5,000 pounds of food, water, air, oxygen or air supply equipment for the space station, some student experiments. The first private asteroid mining company web spacecraft called Arctic 3 was on this. All of that destroyed and lost in the first 10 seconds as this rocket exploded.
How high was the rocket off the ground, off the pad, when it went boom?
Well, it wasn't that high at all. I mean, the rocket itself is about 14 stories tall. It got just above. It has this kind of like a swing arm that attaches and keeps it upright when it's not moving. It got just above that when something happened in the first 10 seconds. It exploded, and we saw images today of this launch pad, burned and charred structures. Substantial damage there on the eastern shore.
What's known at this point about why it exploded, and what's the range of speculation, Tariq?
Well, a lot of speculation right now is aimed at the first stage of this rocket. What we know is that somewhere in the first 10 to 20 seconds, something did go wrong. The imagery and the video show what looks like an explosion or something near the bottom of the rocket, and then the rocket just starts to fall down. The launch controllers, the Orbital folks, did activate its range destruction to kind of safeguard it. So when they saw something was wrong, they hit the button to blow it up too. And then the rocket fell back onto the pad and exploded in this gigantic fireball that was visible even from the air. There's images of it. The speculation is really aimed at this first stage rocket. They use these heritage engines called AJ-26. They were originally built in the 60s for Russia's for the Soviet moon program, and they've been kind of refurbished for use now. So there's a really close look being put on those, because Orbital had one fail on a test stand earlier this year.
I'm reading about made in Ukraine, an old model Russian rocket. Was it actually an old rocket or just an old design, Tariq?
It's the actual engines themselves. These are engines that were originally developed for the defunct Soviet N-1 moon rocket. There is something like two dozen or more of those engines that were purchased by a company called Aerojet out in California, and they've got like a stockpile of the engines that they then refurbish, and Orbital buys the refurbished engines from Aerojet and uses two of those engines on the liquid fuel first stage of this rocket.
So this would have been actually built originally in the 1960s. It's a refurbished 1960s rocket engine?
Exactly. Wow. And so that's what a lot of the speculation is really centering on, largely because when Orbital was testing one of their engines in early summer of this year, it did fail. It did explode on a test pad in Mississippi, and then Orbital delayed an earlier launch because of that, so that they could understand what had happened then.
The Russian rocket manufacturer is saying it's not its fault. Is this part and parcel of privatization? How does that come in here? I mean, I can't imagine, well, I can't imagine. These days, NASA's reaching out to Russia for a lot. But historically, it's hard to imagine NASA reaching out to Russia for a decades-old rocket engine. Is this part of the dynamic of privatization that may have set up this, well, I don't know if it's a tragedy, no humans aboard, but still.
It's an example of a couple of things. One of them is, you know, space is hard. It's difficult to build and launch these vehicles. And in my personal opinion, it's surprising that these commercial missions to the space station, we didn't have an incident like this before. I mean, Orbital has launched this rocket designed four separate times, two test launches last year, two actual cargo missions to the space station in 2014. Another company with NASA contracts, SpaceX, has launched four missions to the space station flawlessly. And its rocket has worked just as expected from the get-go. So, that to me was surprising that we haven't seen something like this before. But the sourcing of the engines themselves is not unique to the commercial industry. In fact, yesterday, the U.S. Air Force launched a military GPS satellite on an Atlas V rocket. It's one of the workhorses of the U.S. launcher fleet, and it uses Russian RD-180 rocket engines, something that the military is looking at closely to make sure that it does kind of diversify its own propulsion capabilities for American rocket engines.
Very briefly, is the space station in trouble without this cargo? And who pays for the cargo and damage lost?
Well, NASA and Orbital are working on a contingency agreement. It's part of their contract that there is some sort of financial reimbursement or delivery assurance for the lost cargo. The station itself has enough supplies, even without this cargo, to last through early next year. March 2015 is what we're hearing. And a Russian cargo ship just actually launched and arrived yesterday, too, with extra supplies. SpaceX will launch another one in December with its own rockets, too.
Options in space. They must be thinking about options or at least corrections on the ground. Tariq Malik, it's great to have you, managing editor of space.com. Thank you for joining us, Tariq.
Thanks, Tom. Always a pleasure.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation at the On Point website, onpointradio.org. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.